And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure...
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
Good morning. This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And welcome to the big program. You know, Jeff, this week...
What, Fred?
Yeah, there's this really cool thing. The U of A has this daily newsletter.
Wait a second.
What?
The U of A has a daily newsletter?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's
is it the Daily Wildcat?
No, new email. I guess it's an e-letter.
Okay.
You know, it's hard to remember
all so
technology stuff.
You find that
so
in
I get
your
this
inbox?
Thing by okay. email every morning.
Uh-huh.
And then they have a weekly thing that sort of has the top stories for the week. But anyways...
Is this for all the colleges?
For all the colleges within the U of A, yeah.
Wow, okay.
With the University of Arizona. So on Tuesday, I think it was, the e-letter came out, and there's a really cool article about how scientists, including folks from the U of A, are preparing to take a first-ever picture of a black hole. And I mean,
and I could make a joke about that, but go ahead.
Yeah, you could. And I'm sure folks right now are thinking about all sorts of things. But, you know, black holes, like this really dense thing that's the gravitational fields are so strong that it just sucks everything in, including light.
And yeah, I think we have an uncle like that.
Yeah, we do.
Anyhow.
You digress. So anyways, they're going to take a picture of the black hole at the center of the Milky Way galaxy, which is the galaxy that our little planet Earth currently resides.
Yeah.
And I think last Wednesday they were having some kind of a summit with all the scientists that are participating. But the cool thing about this is that...
I knew there was a cool thing coming, though.
They're taking every single... telescope, it's not, you know, the radio telescopes,
yeah,
not the visual ones, but the radio ones. They're looking at radio waves. Every telescope on the globe is going to be put together electronically as one giant telescope. So the Earth, so think about this radio telescope the size of the Earth taking a picture of a black hole at the center of the galaxy.
That's crazy.
It's cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Now,
Fred, why do you bring that up?
Because friend of the show, Joaquin Ruiz, who is the dean of the College of Science,
right?
We're going to be getting him on, and or somebody else who's participating in this program
to talk
about
future show.
The black hole called Jeff. I've actually named the black hole at the center of our galaxy Jeff.
You know, I'm very, very, very honored that you would name such an important thing after your little brother.
Yeah.
You should be quite a guy.
You should be now, I think.
So, folks, thanks for tuning in to the Fred and Jeff Show. As you can tell, Fred is so excited, about the black hole that he skipped some stuff.
No, I didn't skip to it. We haven't gotten to it yet.
Oh.
Because I would have skipped it if I said it's time for commercial because...
Okay, we'll be right back.
No, we're not.
So, thanks for tuning in to the Fred and Jeff Show.
That's right.
Talk about all the great things that happen in Tucson and Southern Arizona. Taking pictures of black holes is just one little bit of what's going on great in the community.
That's right. And actually, speaking of taking pictures, our friend of the show, Sherry Graves, is in studio taking pictures of our shenanigans. So you can go to fredandjeff.com or visit us on Facebook at The Fred and Jeff Show, and you're going to see some quality, high-quality photos from Sherry, because the ones you and I take are really... On the low end of bad.
Low end of bad is right. So, speaking of taking pictures. Oh, yeah. So is that how you got into this? Sherry's in here taking pictures, and you thought, hey, they're going to take a picture of a black hole.
No, I knew that. When I read that on Tuesday, I was like, this is something cool, and we got to get Joaquin back on.
That's a good one. So we got a big show for you, folks. We've got lots of good guests today, lots of fun things coming up, lots of things that are important to Tucson, important to our community. And so stick around. We'll be back in a couple minutes after we pay the bills here on The Fred and Jeff Show.
Visit The Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
Are you planning a special event or celebration? Call Arizona Party Rental, the number one party rental company in Southern Arizona.
Dave Fitzsimmons, cartoonist here. I figured since you can buy politicians so easily these days, why not rent an entire party? So I contacted Arizona Party Rental, and they said, That's not what we do. Well, guess what I found out? I found out they rent everything you need to throw a party. You know, I'm the kind of guy who likes getting married so often, it's good to know. Planning a party or a special event? Check him out at ArizonaPartyRental.net. Now, every time I get married, I call on Arizona Party Rental. If you're like me and you say I do more often than Larry King, call on Arizona Party Rental. And unlike Uncle Sam, they understand what a tight budget means.
Thanks a lot, David. Hi, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. Do what Fitzsimmons does. Draw your own conclusions. Visit Arizona Party Rental today on Speedway and check us out on Facebook.
When Jeff and I are looking for a good cigar, we head over to Anthony Cigar Emporium.
That's right, Fred. They have a great selection, knowledgeable staff, a comfortable environment. It's the perfect place to buy a cigar for any time.
Three convenient locations, one at Oracle and McGee, one at Crossroads Festival at Swan and Grant, and their new location at Williams Center at Craycroft and Broadway.
Come on over to Anthony Cigar Emporium, get your cigar, and you might even run into Fred and I, and you can tell us why you love Tucson.
Shelby, how does Five Star give back to its customers?
Existing monthly pest control customers who refer a friend to us receive a discount on their next service.
How about your current termite treatment customers?
When a customer's home is treated for termites, they refer a friend who has their home treated, they will receive an additional year of service on their termite contract.
Wow, that could add up to over $1,000 in savings.
Yes, it can. Log on to our website for details on our customer rewards program.
Five Star, the natural choice. 886-0045, 5starTermite.com.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And welcome back, Tucson. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hello, everybody.
And, you know, we were talking about a black hole at the beginning of the show.
Just a minute ago. Yeah.
Between the right before the commercials.
And
it's funny because that black hole I didn't mention is 400 million times greater than the size of our sun.
You know what's funny about this?
Well, I'm getting to a point
because
we're going from something that's 400 million times bigger than our sun to something that's probably less than an inch. And we're talking to the folks over at the Mini Time Machine Museum.
He's good, isn't he?
Of miniatures.
Yeah, he's good. Say that again. Sorry, Fred. The Mini Time Machine Museum of Miniatures. Right.
And it's a little gem in our community over near, it's like Swan and Camp Lowell, right?
That's right.
And with us is Nina Daldrup, who's the executive director of the museum.
Hi, Fred.
You have to talk.
Hi, Jeff.
This is radio.
Hello. Hello.
It's great to be here.
We're happy to have you. And also with her is Gentry Sproken, who is the director of marketing.
Hi.
For the museum.
Thanks for having us.
All right.
Sproken, I'm sorry. You know, I have the worst time remembering how to pronounce people's names.
And he can't roll his R's either.
That's a hard one.
And no R rolling over there to my right.
Oh, thanks. So this little hidden gem in our community, it's not that actually that hidden. It's really, I think, fairly well known in the community. Tell us a little bit about the history.
We opened in September 2009. We've had 92,000 visitors since then.
92,000?
Yeah, first 30 months. Well, 29 months. Over 30,000 of those are kids who've come with their families or on school field trips. So I think we're starting to grow a nice taproot here in the community. But it's a very special place, about 10,000 square feet of exhibits focused on miniatures.
Now tell us what you're talking about, because a lot of people are familiar. Well, you know, people used to go up to the Hidden Valley Inn, and they had displays of, like, little miniature dioramas, and some of them were mechanical and stuff, and a lot of people knew about that. This is, you know, a few years old, and if somebody's going to the museum, what would they expect to see? I mean, would they see little dioramas with little mechanical people or, you know?
Now, what we have going on right now, folks, is we have two people pointing at each other going, do you want to answer this question? Do you want to? You guys talk away.
I'll field this one. I think a lot of people, when they think of miniatures, the first thing they think of is dollhouses, and we certainly have plenty of those in our collection, but miniatures really are an art form in themselves. And so in our museum, we have three main gallery areas, and they each are sort of themed to what you will find in those galleries. We have our Enchanted Realm Gallery, which houses our fantasy-based miniatures and things that were the imaginative whim of their creators. We also have some collectible items in that gallery. We also have the History Gallery, which has antique miniatures. Our oldest miniature in our collection is from 1742.
Wow, 1742.
Yeah, so
which miniature is that?
It's a Nuremberg kitchen, so it's from Germany. And at this time, miniatures were used as sort of a teaching tool for children. So we have a lot of kitchens from Germany that were intended to teach young children how to become good homemakers. And so the History Gallery, again, examples of how miniatures were used in a practical sense and how they've been used throughout time. And then the last gallery is the Around the World Gallery, Exploring the World. And we have our contemporary miniatures there that show how other cultures live, how they build their homes, and more contemporary miniatures in that gallery.
So I have to tell you guys, I've been to your place a couple times. I've got an 8-year-old daughter, and she absolutely loves the museum.
Loves it. Great to hear.
Yeah, now, and so as the adult following her around, as she's standing in front of these miniatures in awe, the question I have is, how did you collect this stuff? I mean, it's so diverse. How did you bring it all together?
The collection is one woman's work over a period of about 30 years. Patricia Arnell started collecting in the late 70s, and she is a miniature artisan herself. But
Nina, what does that mean, a miniature artisan?
She makes miniatures. She was reminded, I think, when she moved to Tucson and was unpacking things, she found some miniature furniture from a dollhouse she had as a child and thought, I should make something with this. Went to a miniature shop and bought a room box, which is just a box that you can make a scene in, kind of like a diorama.
Diorama, right.
And started putting together a little scene using her childhood furniture, and it just took off from there. She took classes. She makes miniatures now. She's especially fascinated with petit point and miniature needlework. But amassed this collection, began to go to auctions, commissioned some pieces, and filled her entire home with miniatures. Her husband added on to the house, built another building next door to house the miniatures, and she filled that up over the course of the decades. And at this point in her life, they decided, oh, we should probably do something with this collection. They established a foundation and set about collecting the resources to build a museum, and they've made it a gift to the community.
That's fantastic. So a labor of love is now something for all the kids, all the people in Southern Arizona or anywhere in the world to come and enjoy.
Yeah, it's really a world-class museum.
That's fabulous. Now, how did you guys pick the place that you put the museum? Because you've got it right smack in the dab in the middle of town, over on Camp Lowell and Swan.
I think that the Arnells were looking for a place that they felt would be a beautiful location. The property was available, and you'll see when you drive into the property that it is sort of a very special kind of a natural wonderland. Mm-hmm. You know, we're down near the Rieto River. The vegetation is beautiful. They preserved a lot of the old mesquite trees. So you kind of enter a special world as you come through our gates.
That's great. Are you guys still growing the collection?
We're growing the collection, but we've already run out of space.
Really?
So Pat continues to look for special pieces, and we had a fantastic donation a year ago of 5 extraordinary pieces from a nationally known miniature maker. But we are definitely sort of feeling constrained and thinking that, you know, perhaps we need a new wing, or we have to address putting things in storage and rotating the collection in future years.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. So I know I've got a 7-year-old boy, and he would like to know when the Star Wars collection is
miniature
going to start.
Star.
Yeah, the miniature Star Wars starts.
That might be not be too far-fetched. We actually are working on different ways to involve people locally and in the community that are involved with miniatures. And so we've had some temporary exhibits with some things that are a little off the beaten path. For example, Metal Monsters was an exhibit we had last fall, and it was a Tucson artist who created these miniature rusted out automobile relics. And so it was sort of a different twist, and it brought in a new audience. And so the overall objective is to engage people with miniatures. So we're always looking for new ways to do that.
And goofy question, I'm sorry, but why miniatures? Why, of all the things that she fell in love with, How did she fall in love with miniatures? I mean, she had to have a history of, was it her parents? Was it, do you guys know? Am I asking a terrible question?
I think in Pat Arnell's case, miniatures were very attractive to her, that she's fascinated by the quality and the craftsmanship. And she also has a very playful sense of humor, and she found that she could create a miniature scene and really build a whole backstory about what's going on, and it's all very manageable.
Well, and that's what you see when you come into the museum. You see, and I don't know if diorama is the right term for it, but you actually see, and I think Fred was alluding to it for folks that had gone to what was the restaurant?
Hidden Valley.
Yeah, the Hidden Valley Inn, is you walk in and you see a whole town, or as you were saying earlier, Gendry, a kitchen. Mm-hmm. And it's quite fascinating how you guys put that together.
Well, the whole concept of miniature time machine is a Pat Arnell concept, and it's about capturing a moment in time, but being able to kind of hop on the time machine and go somewhere, you know, so you can go back in history and you can move forward kind of into the fantasy world. But it's really about sort of taking you out of this world and into something much greater. So even though it's a small world, it's actually really large, kind of a black hole.
Nice. Very nice.
Now, so, are there any local artists who've contributed to the museum? I mean, obviously, you just talked about the exhibit that was here a little while back, but are there anything in the standing collection from local folks?
Madeline Cook is the person who comes to mind first off, and there are five very extraordinary pieces in the collection by Madeline Cook, the largest being Lanyap, which is in our lobby because it is so big that there isn't another place for it in the museum.
And what is that?
It's a 18th century Tidelands, Virginia mansion. It's just a beautiful piece.
Yes, it is.
Two stories. You recognize
that.
Yeah,
and it's fully furnished. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's an amazing piece.
There are other things in the collection that are made by local artists. Casey Rice is another one who's very well known. She's done a lot of restoration of important miniatures from the past. But so many things are compilations. You'll find 100 extraordinary miniatures within one piece. So you really have to spend some time, take a look.
Yeah, it's not a museum that you can just walk through and gaze around. Every time you look at something, there's something else to look at, if that makes sense. And that mansion that you're talking about is a perfect example. You could walk around that thing for an hour and see something new every time you look. It's amazing.
I've been there 2.5 years, and I'm still seeing things on a daily basis that I never saw before.
Here's a question for you. Because their things are so small and so delicate, how do you keep them clean?
We do our best.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of dust here in the Southwest, and when the wind blows, the dust comes up, and your doors open and close. How do you keep and your museum is immaculate. How do you do that?
Fortunately, the design and the exhibit design team was so well executed, and all of the casework was designed specifically for these miniatures. So they thought about how we would be able to access them, get inside, be able to do maintenance and repair. But it is a big job.
We actually have a micro vacuum, a little tiny vacuum that'll actually, you can get inside the house and vacuum down the hall, but it's a...
You're kidding me, right?
No, I'm not kidding you. It's about an inch.
Little miniature service staff that comes in.
Yeah. Yeah, the attachments for the vacuum are all maybe half inch to an inch long.
Wow.
And yeah, little tiny brushes, and you can kind of get in and vacuum these.
That's awesome.
It's fun.
That's very cool. So where do you see the museum 5 years from now?
I think that we are... we're earning our place among this incredible sort of panorama of cultural institutions in this town. You know, we have a great tradition here. And I think in 5 years, we will have had probably 250,000 visitors, maybe more. And we'll have a very big presence nationally. We're just rolling out a national campaign. And we're doing a lot of work in video so that we can share our museum with people around the world. So I would expect that we'll build a pretty big reputation and bring people to Tucson.
When you do a video, you're talking about posting it on your website and people can actually go through the museum without being in the museum.
We haven't done a virtual tour yet. We've sort of talked about that. But we have done a lot of... sort of close-up work with one miniature and usually an interview with the artist, and we'll kind of do a little tour inside a miniature. And we've also done some work in videoing our summer camps and how kids engage with miniatures so that we can kind of share that and encourage people to really get started.
Well, tell us how they do that. How do kids engage?
I think that that there's a lot of appeal to miniatures for people of all ages, but children in particular are so fascinated by them. So it makes it a really great way to teach them about other principles. It lends itself to teaching them about language arts or about social studies in a way that's more interesting and captures their attention. I think so little holds our attention these days, but for whatever reason, when you see them in the galleries, they're just immersed and in awe. And so it's just wonderful to see. We have a program called Kids Create, which is the second Saturday of every month from 1 to 4 p.m. And it's included with museum admission, and there's a different project every month that's designed for small hands. So it's something that a child can make out of usually household items or things that you would have easy access to. And it really helps with dexterity, I think, for them, and imagination, seeing purposes for things that weren't their intended purpose. So it's really great.
I like that a lot. I love it when the museums engage the kids, because as you engage those children, they come back, they get their parents to come back, and it's really that hands-on is what makes it a special thing for those kids. So good for you guys. What other programs you guys have coming up?
We have a new exhibit opening on the 31st of January, and that is called Shaping Arizona Statehood, the George Stewart Historical Figures of the Movement West.
Ooh, nice.
Yes.
George Stewart.
How appropriate.
Yeah, tell us about George Stewart.
So this exhibit has a centennial theme. George Stewart creates quarter-scale figures, historical figures, and so we will have 14 figures from his Movement West collection that represent over 400 years of New World discovery, which led to Arizona becoming a state in 1912.
Very cool.
That is nice.
Very cool.
There are some fascinating characters in this collection, and I spent my entire weekend reading about John Fremont, who was the territorial governor of Arizona. He is the most recent figure in this historic panorama. But Fremont and Kit Carson, who's another one of the figures that will be in this show, did some incredible discovery of the Sierra Nevada, you know, the early California territory. And then Fremont came to Arizona as governor, and he and his wife, I think that there's a house downtown. Don't we have the Fremont House downtown?
Yes, we do have
the
Fremont House.
And a street, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we're really excited to have these figures here for 3 months.
That's great. And there's 14 of them?
There's 14 figures, and they're quarter scale, so they're about 18 inches high, and the detail is just absolutely amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting. It brings up a point. I mean, how do you define miniature? Because, I mean, I think of miniature, like when I was a kid, we used to make little pieces of furniture for my sister's dollhouse. I mean, out of balsa.
Wow.
You know, really kind of cheesy stuff, but
no,
you know,
they were.
That's where it began.
Fred actually did
it.
He was very crafty, yeah.
But, you know, so how do you define miniature? Just anything that's
scale.
Below scale?
Yeah, scale is the operative word. Just anything that is a scaled down reproduction or replica.
So Fred would be a miniature of?
Oh, God, I don't want...
There's a place for you at the museum, Fred.
That's awesome.
So now you guys have an event coming up too, right?
We do. We have our first annual fundraising gala called We Grandis, which is Latin for tiny or diminutive.
Nice.
And this is taking place on Friday, January 27th at the museum. And it's a centennial-themed event. It's going to be really exciting. We have Feast catering the menu, which is all regional
nice.
Influences.
Nice.
And it'll be sort of scattered throughout the gallery so guests can sort of immerse themselves in the collection in this low-lighting, special atmosphere, enjoy this food, see performances reminiscent of the Arizona of yore.
All right. And when is this again? When's your event?
January 27th.
Okay.
Grand Overture begins at 5:30 p.m.
Okay.
And the gala at 6:30.
So is this coming Saturday?
Okay, this coming Saturday.
No, Friday. Friday.
Oh, this coming Friday. Friday. Excuse me. And if folks want more information, they should go to your website, which is
www.theminitimemachine.org.
Great.
Awesome.
We got to take a break here at the bottom of the hour for the news, and when we come back, we're going to have a couple of more special ladies, so stick around.
Penn State University issued a statement saying Joe Paterno made the school greater. Paterno, who was diagnosed with lung cancer following his firing last year in the wake of the Jerry Sandusky scandal, died at home today. ABC's David Curley was in State College, Pennsylvania, when the word came.
This announcement came out just a few minutes ago, and already at the statue of Joe Paterno in front of the stadium here in State College, folks are starting to come by. Last night, about 200 students had lit the number of candles, dozens and dozens of candles, and this will be the memorial. This will be where people come to grieve today.
ABC's David Curley. Fresh off his trouncing by Newt Gingrich in the South Carolina primary, second-place finisher Mitt Romney announced on Fox News Sunday that he'll release his 2010 tax return on Tuesday, the same day President Obama delivers his State of the Union address. Divers at the capsized cruise ship Costa Concordia recovered a woman's body, raising the known death toll to 13. Richard Cantu, ABC News.
Good Sunday morning to you. I'm KGUN meteorologist Aaron Brackett. Partly cloudy skies will be the rule for today. Maybe a sprinkle, but the best chance of that will remain off to the east of Tucson. You're going to notice the cooler temperatures, though. 63 degrees for tonight. Yeah, just a couple degrees away from freezing. We'll call it 35. And a cool start to the week. Mostly sunny skies on your Monday, high of 61. For 104.1 The Truth, Tucson News Talk FM, I'm meteorologist Aaron Brackett.
Barker Morrissey Contracting, our goal is to develop lasting relationships with each one of our clients. We measure our success on achieving that in the end. We offer the best possible combination of experience, integrity, and commitment available in Arizona. The foundation of our organization is a commitment to meet our clients' needs from pre-construction services through project build and move-in. We have experienced, cohesive project managers who thoroughly analyze each project prior to construction. We do this to provide value engineering at the front end of the project while reducing time-consuming change orders during construction. We are confident that our collaboration with you will result in a successful project that will exceed your expectations. Barker Morrissey Contracting. Straightforward, honest, and reliable. Call us at 323-3831 to set up an appointment. That's 323-3831.
Do you suffer from irrigation leaks, a broken sprinkler, leaky valves, or you just can't find the problem? At H&S Garden, we provide high-quality, reliable service at reasonable prices. Our repair technician has over 25 years of experience. And if you hate pulling weeds, raking mesquite beans, or trimming those thorny bushes, just leave the dirty work to us. We're licensed contractors with 30 years of experience in landscape management. Our crews are professional and take pride in their work. We'll meet you on site to establish a program that works for you. Call today at 293-6488 or visit us at hsgarden.com. H&S Garden, a family-owned and operated Tucson small business.
What's a monkey burger?
A simple, well-made burger cooked to your choice.
Why monkey burger?
We called it that because come see our art on the walls. It tells a story. Monkey burger, where it's impossible to be a food snob, even if they do serve wine, beer, as well as Tucson's best burger. 514-9797.
Just drive right past Olive Garden on Broadway and Craycroft and park in front of Monkey Burger.
Power Women Investing, an award-winning comprehensive financial services firm, offers customized programs designed to help grow and conserve your wealth. We encourage you to explore our website at powerwomeninvesting.com and learn more about the services we provide. If you would like to make an appointment, call us at 571-9053. That's 571-9053.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And welcome back. This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Is it just a beautiful day out there or what?
It is. Every single day in this community is a beautiful day.
It is just the weather is absolutely stunning.
If it's raining and you know, overcast or you know, bright and sunny, it's just gorgeous every single day.
Yeah, it's great outside.
And we have the most wonderful resources. I mean, think about Sabino Canyon, Soar National Monuments, all the national parks.
More bike trails than any other city in in the country, I believe.
Yeah. Friend of the show, George Jensen, and I, you know, we're biking almost every day, and it's spectacular.
Yeah,
it's just wonderful to be
in. This is a great time to be in Tucson, absolutely.
Well,
get rid of all of our burned-out bushes and trees, knowing that if we replanted, they wouldn't get frosted again. It'd be spectacular. But I fell for that once before.
Yeah. Well, this is Fred and Jeff Show, and we would love you to join us on our electronic companion to the show, which is fredandjeff.com.
What does electronic companion mean, Fred? Now, we've been doing this show for 2 years, and I still have no idea what electronic companion means.
It means that it's...
Is that like a little friend you have that visits you in the night?
It is a little friend that you have. You can visit our show with our little companion. And if you actually miss it when we're broadcasting live, you can listen to past shows. You can see pictures of people.
Basically, it's a website, right?
It's a website.
Okay. But you were just being... Yeah, I don't know what you were being. Our electronic companion.
Our website. This is so cold. So cold.
I know, but I didn't know what you were talking about.
All right, so visit us at friendjeff.com, or if you'd like to be on with our weekly newsletter, which does not contain any of Jeff's ranting, send me an email at fred@friendjeff.com. And also, that's an important email address to know, because later in the show, our friends from Mayfield Florist give us a dozen roses to give away, and we're... Someone who will get them today.
Yeah, almost in time for Valentine's Day.
Almost
in time. The roses are going to be at a premium now. We're going to have to make these trivia questions tougher.
Yeah, like so you won't give the answer out as I'm asking the question.
I try not to, but you know, sometimes I'm so scatterbrained. I want to make sure we're talking about the same thing.
I can't even get the whole entire question out before you're giving the answer.
Okay, I'll try not to do that this week.
All right. The question might have something to do with Germany or Nuremberg.
Oh, okay.
Something we talked about the first part of the show.
Okay, or something we're talking about the second part of the show with our guests.
We do have guests, don't
from
we?
From
the Tucson Community Food Bank.
That's right.
Hello, ladies.
Hello there.
We have Pauline Heckler and Stephanie Porter. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Great. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So, the Tucson Community Food Bank is a well-known organization in this community. Well-known.
We are really fortunate that we've been around. This is our 36th year.
36 years.
And we actually changed our name this past year to the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona, because about 3 years ago we added on service to Graham, Greenlee, and Cochise counties. So in addition to Santa Cruz and Pima counties, we have those other three. So we're delivering food all over this part of the woods.
Now, was anyone servicing those areas before you guys extended?
Yes and no, but there is so much poverty out in these rural areas, and the unemployment is terrible. And Department of Economic Security actually asked us if we would apply for that contract to deliver food out there, and so we did.
Good for you. Good for. So how many folks are you serving in Southern Arizona?
Well, we distribute enough food for 61,000 meals a day.
And wow.
That equates to about 285,000 individuals each month.
So you guys are feeding 200. Of that 285,000 folks, how much is repeat business?
Well, that's unduplicated. And the reason it's so much is that not only are we distributing food boxes to families, and there are about 30,000 of those that our volunteers make up every month, and so you multiply that by about four. But we've also got all of the other donated food that we pass along for free to about 200 agency partners that serve food. So a lot of the other, quote, food banks that you hear about in the community are actually distributing food boxes for us, or other donated items like diapers and pet food and condiments and things that do not go into food boxes.
So you guys distribute diapers as well?
We do if we're given them. We do not solicit diapers, but okay, we certainly will pass them along to our agency partners, because we've got a lot of group homes and foster care situations, sure, where people have children and it's so expensive. And the elderly, of course, a lot of them need help in that way. So, yeah, the diapers do not get wasted.
Is there there's a connection between the Food Bank of Southern Arizona and the Pima Council on Aging and all the food that they distribute to the folks that rely on them as well?
Pima Council on Aging may be one of our agency partners. I think it is. And they may come over and get food from us. We get a ton of food donated from restaurants and hotels and grocery stores that is perishable and cannot go into a food box.
And you got to get it out.
And
you
we get that out to places like Casa Maria, Gospel Rescue Mission, Salvation Army, all the places that actually serve food, along with all these other group homes and soup kitchens.
Well, let's talk about that, Pauline. There are two aspects of the food bank. First is when people donate food or dollars – how it, you know, if I were to have a big party at the house and we had 40 people there and we had a bunch of food left over, could I call you up and say, hey, come on over, I have extra food, and take it away and give it to people that, that, you know, are dependent on the food bank?
If it has not been served, we can take it and pass it along. If it has actually been served, we might find another agency that would take it off your hands. But our restrictions are quite strict because we don't want anybody getting sick.
Right.
And we need to make sure that all food is transported properly and kept in a cooler and all of that stuff. So we're pretty finicky about what we take.
But at the drop of a hat.
If you did a food drive
right.
as part of your party,
sure.
then we would be happy to provide you with boxes. And depending on how much food you collected, was too much for you to bring to us, we would send somebody to pick it up.
Oh, well, let's talk about that for a second, because, you know, in the wake of community events, like, you know, January 8th, obviously, there's a big push for the food drive, for the community food bank, because Gabby is a big supporter. And, you know, so there something happens to the community, and the food bank is always there to respond. So how do people generally set those things up?
They give somebody they know, sometimes me or our transportation manager, Jacob Coldsmith, a call at the food bank and say, I want to have a food drive. And then depending on where they are, we can drop boxes off for them. And then our drivers are going around town every day collecting food. And so we will put them into the routing system to pick up the food after it's collected. And if it's a small amount and people can bring it over themselves, that saves us a lot of money.
Yeah,
so we always appreciate that.
Well, wait a second. Let's define small amount.
Well, if it's small enough to get into your car.
That's good enough.
Yes. In fact, I have a box in my car as we speak, because it seems like wherever I go, somebody says, I have food for you.
Oh, that's great.
And I put it in the trunk. And actually, I'm so glad we're talking about this, because I got it last Friday and I forgot to turn it in on Friday.
Oh, so that bread's getting
moldy. I'll turn it in and I get back there today.
Now, you're talking about drivers and other staff. This is truly a community endeavor. You have, you know, paid people and volunteers. So give us a breakdown of the number of people who are actually supporting this operation.
We've got 117 staff. And when you think about all the drivers that go all over this area and our five branch banks, we've got branches in Marana, Amato, Ajo, Sahuarita, Green Valley, and Nogales. We've got a little bit of staff at each of those branches. And then we have probably several hundred volunteers that are regular volunteers that come every week and help us sort the donated food, help us put it into food boxes. We've got people in the development department where I am who help us sort the mail, send out thank you letters, print.
Anything to run a business.
Yes. And then we've got a lot of people that help us enter data, because whenever someone new comes in for a food box, we collect data from them, and that goes into our system so that we have to track and make sure that people only receive one food box per month per family, which is a shame. But we need to make sure with the limited supply we have that everybody who needs food gets it before anyone gets seconds.
And what is in a food box?
Well, it's for a family of four, say, or a larger family. It's usually cereal, peanut butter, canned meat if we can afford it, canned vegetables, canned fruit, reconstituted milk if we have it. And then the LDS Church has a clean room, and they take big bags of beans and rice and sort them into little, put them into little bags. So there's a little bag of beans, a little bag of rice, and sometimes pasta. That's all a typical food box. And then we get all this donated food thanks to the food drives people have. And so we'll throw in a cake mix and an icing or some cookies, a few treats to round things out.
Now, you guys had a big donation this last week.
Yes.
Through Safeway.
Yes, we did. We had 30 million. No, let me get this right.
30 million.
That's a lot of money.
We had.
Was it, you said?
30,000 pounds.
30,000 pounds.
Of donated ham, bacon, pulled pork and barbecue sauce from a company back east that is donating 20 million pounds of food around the country. And they're doing it in conjunction with Safeway. And Safeway asked them please to come to Tucson because we've had such a difficult year after last January 8th. And it's been tough. And they said, you know, why don't you come here? People could use a lift. And we've got a lot of people out of work. And even the people that are working need help.
And you just said we've had a difficult year after January 8th. But I don't understand it.
Well, the tragedy last January 8th where we had the shootings at the Safeway shopping center.
Right. That's the connection for that. But,
yes.
But you're also alluding to the economy.
And I am.
Yeah, the economy has been bad.
Yes, we've seen a rise in unemployment. We've seen quite a shift in need. And unfortunately, we've also seen a downturn in the amount of food that's being donated to us through the government. So
there's
USDA
no
isn't buying up the extras that they were. And I don't know if it's a lack of money on their part or not so much extra on the market.
Hmm.
It may be a combination of the two. But we're down about 2 million pounds of food right now, and that's a lot of money
that's
for us to turn around and buy.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's talk about the sources of food. Because
wait a second, Fred. Before we do that, because that's an important question, we have to take a super fast break, pay the bills, and then we'll be back for the last part of the show. So, folks, stick around to the Fred and Jeff Show. We'll be right back.
Visit the Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
Casa de la Luz is Spanish for House of Light. That's what one needs when facing a terminal illness. A House of Light to provide comfort, support, and experienced hospice care during the end-of-life journey. The mission of Casa de la Luz is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Founded in 1998 by Lynette Jaramillo and Agnes Poor, Casa de la Luz Hospice has become a leading provider of superior hospice care throughout southern Arizona. Whether it is in the hospital, at home, an assisted center, or a nursing home, the caring staff at Casa de la Luz will reach far beyond the usual and customary hospice service. Every service provided is a reflection of our commitment to our community. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
I'm Jim Ronstadt. Over 100 years ago, my grandfather established Ronstadt Hardware in the heart of the Old Pueblo. The Ronstadts were a pioneer family during the growth of a fledgling city, and his store was founded on hard work, craftsmanship, and good service.
This is Jeff Ronstadt, and I am proud to carry on the family tradition with my dad at Ronstadt Insurance. In these trying economic times, you may have many questions about your health care and what's on the horizon. You may be asking questions like, how do I enroll in a Medicare plan and how much will it cost? Are my prescription drugs covered? And what will my out-of-pocket cost be?
If you are confused about Medicare, call us at 721-4848 and we will help you make a confident decision about your Medicare benefits. We are insurance agents licensed by the state of Arizona and we would be honored to assist you.
That's Ronstadt Insurance. Call us at 721-4848. We are pioneers in good service.
Proud to live in Tucson?
Because the trauma team at UMC delivers life-saving care.
Because the engineers at Solon make solar energy a reality.
While Davis-Monthan Air Force Base helps protect our freedoms.
Because researchers at Ventana Medical Systems lead the way in the nation's fight against cancer.
And because the Tucson Conquistadors raise millions of dollars to support kids' charities.
This is my Tucson, and together we thrive.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And this is Fred and Jeff Show. Welcome back. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hello, everybody.
And we're talking to the heroes from the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona. Is that, did I get that right?
Yes, you did. Thank you for using the name. I don't know about the heroes part, but the name is correct.
Formerly Tucson Community Food Bank.
Right.
But we are serving people in Southern Arizona now.
Yes.
So it's a broader reach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before the break, we were talking about, you know, the food coming in, and you were saying that there are different sources Yes. Or actually, asking the question, you know, what are the different sources of the food? Because obviously, you have, you know, the food drives. People just make straight donations. They'll drop it off for the Senate checker.
It breaks down about a third. About a third is from the government. About a third is donated thanks to all the wonderful people in this neck of the woods who have food drives. And also Feeding America out of Chicago organizes donations that are shared among about 200 different food banks around the country. So about a third of the food we get is donated in some way. And then we purchase about a third of it. Our budget this year for purchasing food was $800,000, and it's way short.
What should it have been?
If I'm trying to raise another couple of million this next 6 months to allow us to purchase more food to make up for the surprise lack of government food that's happening.
Right.
Now, when you say government is about a third of that, now there's the old government cheese thing. Now, how does the government contribute? Is it cash? Is it actually, are they taking food?
We actually receive commodities from them, and those go into our emergency food boxes. They're called TFAP boxes, the Emergency Food Assistance Program.
Okay.
And for some programs, they do get that government cheese. We have a Food Plus program that's one program, and then we have the emergency food boxes, and that's more canned goods and non-perishables.
And were those just sort of commodities that come off the market?
Yeah, they come in big truckloads to the warehouse. They get offloaded. It's canned goods and bags of things, boxes of cereal. It's unbelievable.
That's great.
Yeah. Now, you know, I know that, you know, you would want people to donate everything. I mean, food, money, time, all those things. What's probably the most valuable source for the food bank? I mean, is it the canned goods? Is it cash? Is it, you know?
Well, in terms of food,
I remember hearing old things about, you know, the food bank can take more with it, make a dollar work harder than me going to the grocery store and bringing some food in.
We can. Our auditors every year figure out a multiplier effect, a formula that shows that right now for every dollar we receive, we can distribute $9.50 of food. But I want to be clear that that doesn't mean that we take that dollar and buy $9.50 of food with it. It means that when you look at all the donated food that we receive and you put all of this into a formula, that's how efficient we are. So we love the cash. It's awesome, and we need it desperately. But I never want to take away the joy that some people receive from giving food, especially children. They love looking in the cupboard and picking their favorite something and giving that to someone that they know is hungry.
Yeah, paying it forward. That's great.
And a lot of adults feel the same way. It's almost a spiritual thing. So we love the food, and the food adds variety to our food boxes, which are really rather dull. It's the same stuff over and over.
Well, do you have a formula for the food box? You have to have grain and a certain...
Yes, we use that My Plate formula that came out. It's the new food pyramid where it's, you know, about half vegetables and fruits and about half grains and carbohydrates, and so the things that I mentioned before make up that balanced food box.
So it is balanced, a balanced meal for that family.
It is,
as opposed to just stuff that we've got, you know, that you guys get donated.
Yes,
you know how to round those boxes out so folks are getting the maximum nutrition possible as well.
We do. We're really big on nutrition, and a lot of people don't realize that we're also teaching people how to grow their own food.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Let's talk about the community garden.
Yes. I want to leave time for Mardi Gras, but the community garden is awesome, and we've got about 300 home gardeners now that are growing their own food. It's a very empowering thing to grow your own food.
That's great.
And we've got a big farm, a 10-acre farm that's on loan to us from the town of Marana. And we're working that farm, and we're training kids 16 to 20 years old how to be farmers. And they love it. And they have the coolest ideas, like pizza gardens and really cool ways to grow food. The farm is lovely. And then we have people that are doing so well growing their own food that they're becoming part of our consignment program, which is very entrepreneurial. They bring their extra food to one of our 5 farmers markets, and we sell it for them.
So the farmers markets around Tucson are run by...
Well, 5 of them are ours, but there are others too.
Okay.
But ours do accept food stamps and WIC vouchers, which is a lovely way for people to eat healthfully.
A WIC voucher?
A WIC voucher is for the Women, Infants, and Children's Program, and it's for people 60 or over whose incomes have qualified them, or for little kids and postpartum moms.
Okay.
They can qualify through the county for a WIC voucher in a box every month, and that just extends nutrition to the family.
That's great, because we all know that, you know, obesity and diabetes are an epidemic in the United States now, and so you guys are helping people understand how to eat properly, as well as giving them the tools to do that and the food to do that.
We are.
That's
and we
fantastic.
We put recipes into the food boxes when there's something weird in there, like quinoa. Or
Which is phenomenal. Quinoa's great
stuff.
It's
wonderful. It's so full of protein. And then the U of A sends dietitians over, and they do kind of a Costco thing in our warehouse where we distribute the boxes and cook stuff and let people taste it so they know it's good.
Well, because that's got to be a very cultural thing as well.
Yes.
When you've got something in there that folks aren't used to.
It is.
I don't know what I'm going to do with this. And instead of not eating it, you say, hey, look, it tastes good. Try it. That's great.
Yeah, it makes the difference.
Okay, so you've got a big fundraiser coming up.
We do, and we have Stephanie Porter, our chair here. Stephanie started on the board as our youth representative, and we've been able to keep her with us, and now she's at Cox Communications. She's all grown up and chairing our event.
All right, Stephanie, so tell us about the big gala.
Well, this is the 6th annual Mardi Gras. It's Saturday, January 28th, 7 p.m.
It's this coming Saturday.
It's this coming Saturday.
Okay.
And the proceeds this year are going to benefit the child and nutrition programs, which Pauline kind of touched on. 1 in 4 children in Pima County suffer from hunger.
Wow.
So we'll focus the proceeds this year on those programs. The king and queen of the carnival this year, we always have a king and queen to honor, are Ron and Nancy Barber. There'll be New Orleans-style food and cocktails. Batoukache and Flem Chen will form, and then we'll also have after-dinner dancing with Zoe Carroll and the Soulbreakers, a great jazz band, and 80s and Gentlemen.
That's great. 80s and Gentlemen, we know someone in that band.
We know someone in the band. But
yeah,
Flem Chen is awesome. I love playing with fire.
Where is this event?
It's downtown at the historical Manning House, and if you want to purchase tickets, go on to communityfoodbank.org.
Communityfoodbank.org is where you can go to get more information and to buy tickets for the event. Can I walk in? Can I walk in, buy my ticket the day of the event?
We've never had that, but I don't think we would turn it away.
We probably wouldn't have the heart to say, don't come in, but if you could buy the ticket in advance, it would help.
Yeah, you need a head count, right?
Yeah.
Got it.
In the last minute, we have a dozen roses to give away.
Right.
So what are we going to ask?
So if you, the first person to email Fred at fred@fredandjeff.com and tell us how many kids in Southern Arizona, how many out of four go hungry, you're going to win a dozen roses from Mayfield's Florist. And folks, Fred and Jeff Show, we talk about all the wonderful things in Tucson and Southern Arizona. And yeah, tough economy, but you guys, Pauline, the two of you, and all your folks at the Community Food Bank, you're part of the reason that Tucson and Southern Arizona is a great place to live. You look out for your neighbor. You help other people look out for our neighbors. We really appreciate you guys, and we appreciate the folks from the Nina and the folks from the Tiny Museum.
Gentry and Nina from the Mini Time Machine Museum of Adventures and their big festival on Friday.
Right. So, folks, go out there. Be kind to your neighbor, and make a donation to the food bank, because it'll help someone. And have a great week. We'll see you next week here on The Fred and Jeff Show.